When you look at a massive suspension bridge, or I don't know, even just the frame of the car sitting in your driveway, there's this overwhelming illusion of like complete
Oh,
stillness.
absolutely. It just looks completely static.
Right. It is steel, it's solid, it is cold, it is permanent. And you would naturally assume that after, millennia of humanity forging swords and building skyscrapers, we'd have the internal life of steel completely figured out by now.
You'd think so, yeah.
Like we melt it, we cool it, it hardens, and the story is just over.
Yeah, and that is actually the most common misconception about metallurgy. We tend to view metals as these static finished products, but beneath the surface, at the atomic level, the story is far from over.
It's still going.
Oh yeah, there is this incredibly dynamic, chaotic history that is literally frozen inside that structure.
Which perfectly brings us to today's deep dive. We are looking at a really fascinating scientific paper by HKDH Padatia, and it's titled Evolution and Cessation of the Bainite Transformation.
A brilliant paper.
It really is. And our mission today is to explore how cutting-edge real-time observation tools, I'm talking instruments like synchrotrons and atom probes, how they have completely rewritten our fundamental understanding of high-strength steel.
Specifically, this one microstructure inside it called bainite.
Exactly, bainite. And, I want to be clear right up front with you listening at home. This isn't just some abstract academic exercise. This invisible atomic level architecture dictates the real world performance of things you literally rely on every single day.
I mean, the stakes are incredibly high. We're talking about the structural integrity of the railway tracks you ride on during your morning commute, the armor plating used in modern defense, the safety cage of your vehicle.
Right.
All of that depends on scientists mastering these invisible microscopic transformations. Because honestly, if they get the atomic structure wrong, the macroscopic material fails.
Your safety literally depends on it. But to really grasp the massive discoveries outlined in this paper, we first have to kind of understand a deeply entrenched myth.
Oh, the carbon fluctuation theory.
Yes. This is something the scientific community believed for decades. It has this old story of how steel transformed.
Yeah, so for a very long time, scientists looking at bainite formation believed it relied on something called a spinodal reaction.
Which sounds incredibly complicated.
It does, but to put it simply, the idea was that inside the parent phase of the heated steel, which is a high-temperature structure we call austenite, the carbon atoms would naturally start to separate.
Like all on their own.
Exactly. They thought the carbon would segregate entirely on its own before any structural transformation even happened.
Okay, let's unpack this because I try to picture this like a crowded party in a massive open room, right? Before the music even starts or, the lights change, you have the guests naturally clumping together by their shared interests.
That's a great way to visualize it.
So, like, the people who like jazz wander over to one corner, the rock fans wander to another. Under this old theory, they thought the carbon in the steel was spontaneously sorting itself into these carbon-rich zones and carbon-depleted zones.
That party analogy captures the old hypothesis perfectly. The assumption was that the carbon-depleted corners of the room would then easily transform into bainite through a structural rearrangement.
Just because the carbon had conveniently moved out of the way to prep the area.
Right. And what's fascinating here is how this myth was sustained by the technology of the era. Early in-situ X-ray experiments from the mid-20th century actually seemed to support this pre-clumping idea.
Wait, really? So they had actual data backing up the myth.
Well, they had data, but they lacked resolution. Those early X-ray machines looked at the heated austenite, and the scientists thought they saw the crystal lattice splitting into two different parameters right before the steel transformed.
So it looked like the signature of two different carbon concentrations forming.
Exactly.
So they thought they had caught the party guests, like in the act of separating across the room. But let me guess, the modern tools Padatia discusses in the paper painted a completely different picture.
A totally contradictory picture, yeah. When researchers revisited this exact same process using modern high-resolution synchrotron X-ray facilities.
And neutron diffraction tools, right?
Yes, neutron diffraction too. When they used those, the old narrative just completely fell apart.
Because synchrotrons are basically these massive particle accelerators, right? They generate light that's like millions of times brighter than the sun. You aren't just taking a blurry X-ray anymore. You are getting a hyper-precise atomic map.
And that hyper-precise map conclusively proved that the old X-ray peak wasn't splitting at all. The older instruments just had blurry resolution.
So a single shifting peak just looked like two distinct ones.
Exactly. The high-resolution data shows the austenite remains perfectly thermodynamically uniform. It has a unique single lattice parameter right up until the exact microsecond of transformation.
Wow. So there is no pre-clumping. The guests are perfectly mixed, distributed evenly across the entire room right up until the music drops.
Yep, they stay totally mixed.
But I have to push back here, because if the carbon isn't moving around to, you know, prep the area for the phase change, how does the transformation actually happen?
That is the million-dollar question.
Right. Because if a room full of people doesn't organize itself beforehand, how do they suddenly form a totally new crowd structure?
That question forced a complete paradigm shift in how we think about solid-state changes in steel. It transitions us from a model of slow, wandering diffusion,
where atoms just politely step around each other.
Exactly. Away from that, to a model of a violent, displacive physical shift.
Displacive meaning what? The steel just forces the change?
It physically forces a new crystal structure to grow. The steel doesn't wait for carbon to get out of the way. And researchers used atomic force microscopy, or AFM, to prove this.
How does AFM work again?
So it works by dragging an unimaginably sharp microscopic needle over the surface of a material to measure atomic level changes in topography. And what they found was that bainite grows as these three-dimensional plates, or subunits.
Yep.
And as they grow, they literally push up the surface of the steel.
Wait, they bulge out of the surface.
They do. They create what is known as an invariant plane strain shape deformation. To give you the specific metrics, it creates a shear strain of about 0.26 and a normal or dilatational strain of about 0.03.
Okay, let's translate those numbers into something we can visualize. Because a shear strain of 0.26 means that if you had a microscopic, perfect square of this steel, the physical shift violently skews it so hard that the top edge slides over by a quarter of its own length.
It becomes a heavily slanted parallelogram, yeah.
And that normal strain of 0.03 means it's bulging outward by about 3%. That is a massive sudden structural distortion.
Huge, huge.
So instead of party guests wandering around, it is more like a military marching band. Like they are all standing in a massive mixed formation, and then suddenly, in one perfectly synchronized step, a whole section of the band aggressively shifts into a completely new geometric shape.
Forcing everyone else to adjust.
Right.
That synchronized forced movement is the defining characteristic of a displacive transformation. And we actually know exactly how fast that microscopic marching band shifts.
We do. How?
Thanks to another cutting-edge tool called photoemission electron microscopy. This microscope can capture the formation of these individual tiny subunits in real time.
Oh, wow.
The speed is staggering. An individual plate of bainite lengthens at about 75 micrometers per second.
Okay, 75 micrometers per second might sound small to us, but at the microscopic level, pushing through a dense, solid lattice of iron that is moving like a freight train.
It is orders of magnitude faster than what the laws of physics allow for atomic diffusion.
Because diffusion is slow, right?
Extremely slow. If the steel were waiting for carbon atoms to slowly diffuse, hopping from one empty atomic space to another, which requires a lot of thermal energy and time, the mathematical models say it should only grow at a sluggish 0.083 micrometers per second.
So we're talking about 75 versus 0.083. It's not even in the same universe.
Not even close. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this incredible displacive speed is exactly why the carbon doesn't have time to move out of the way.
It just gets trapped.
Yep. The physical transformation sweeps through the iron lattice so aggressively that the carbon atoms are essentially caught entirely off guard.
Which sets up a massive chemical consequence that we definitely need to explore. But real quick, if this microscopic structure is shifting that violently, forcing a new geometric shape at 75 micrometers a second, that much friction and physical displacement inside a solid piece of metal can't possibly be a silent process, right?
It absolutely is not. The sheer kinetic force of that displacive shift brings us to the phenomenon of acoustic emissions.
Wait, so the microscopic physical shift actually creates sound waves?
It does. When a solid-state transformation is reconstructive, meaning it's that slow 0.083 micrometer per second process where atoms are just happily diffusing and wandering to new spots,
yes.
It's totally silent.
There is no shock to the system.
Right. But displacive transformations, like the rapid, jerky growth of bainite plates, create transient elastic sound waves. The atomic lattice violently shears, releasing a pulse of kinetic energy that travels through the material as an acoustic wave.
Wait, so if I'm standing in a steel mill or holding a piece of hot steel while it undergoes this transformation, can I actually hear it screaming?
Well, no, you wouldn't be able to hear it with a naked human ear, largely due to the frequency scale.
Yeah.
We are talking about bursts of acoustic energy between 20 and 900 kilohertz.
And human hearing tops out around, what, 20 kilohertz?
Exactly. So these are ultra-high-frequency microscopic earthquakes. You need special sensors called piezoelectric transducers attached to the metal to detect them.
So it's essentially screaming at a pitch a dog might hear, assuming the dog had, like, microscopic, ultra-sensitive hearing.
Yeah, think of it as a microscopic crackle. The strain energy involved in this shape deformation is massive. It's about 400 joules per mole.
Wow.
And a single microscopic subunit of bainite releases roughly 1.1 nanojoules of elastic energy when it snaps into place.
That sounds intense for a single subunit.
It is. Now, only a tiny fraction of that energy actually converts into detectable sound. But because bainite grows in this jerky subunit by subunit mechanism, stopping and starting repeatedly, it produces a constant stochastic crackle on the acoustic sensors.
A constant crackle? Does all steel sound like that when it shifts?
Actually, no. The frequency of these acoustic emissions is much higher for bainite than it is for martensite, which is another high-strength steel microstructure.
Why is that?
Well, martensite plates tend to grow over much longer continuous distances. Bainite's growth interface is constantly halting and then violently restarting as new subunits form. That start-stop nature makes it significantly noisier on the transducers.
That is wild. I love that we can literally listen to the acoustic signature of the steel to understand how fast and jerky its internal growth is.
It's incredible.
It really paints a picture of what's happening inside the steel beams of a skyscraper during the forging process. But let's go back to those carbon atoms we left behind.
Yes.
Because the marching band violently shifted into a new shape, it created microscopic sound waves. And it did it so fast the carbon didn't have time to leave the area. What happens to all that carbon that gets caught in the crossfire?
This is where we have to rely on data from atom probe tomography.
Okay, what is that?
It's an incredibly sophisticated technique where scientists take a needle-shaped sample of the steel, apply a high voltage, and literally pull individual atoms off the tip, one by one.
Whoa.
Yeah, and those atoms hit a detector, allowing software to map exactly where every single element was located in three-dimensional space.
So you are dismantling the steel atom by atom just to see where the carbon is hiding.
Precisely. And the map revealed something that completely shocked the metallurgical world.
What was it?
The carbon gets thoroughly trapped in solid solution inside the newly formed bainitic ferrite crystal.
Wait, it doesn't just get shoved to the edges of the new shape?
No. Originally, thermodynamic models assumed it had to be clumping around defects, like dislocations or grain boundaries in the crystal. But the atom probe proved it is stubbornly, fundamentally stuck right inside the pristine crystal lattice itself.
Seriously?
Yeah, and it is stuck there in concentrations far exceeding what equilibrium thermodynamics says should even be physically possible.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because you can't just shove extra mass into a fixed space without consequences.
Not at all.
Imagine trying to force a bowling ball into a tightly packed, perfectly square crate of tennis balls. You might be able to push it in using a lot of force, but the structure of the crate has to give.
It has to distort.
Right. The walls literally have to bulge outward to accommodate the intruding mass. The perfectly square crate is forced to stretch into a rectangle.
That is the exact mechanism happening to the crystal lattice. And again, synchrotron experiments confirm this distortion. The trapped carbon atoms force the naturally cubic iron crystal to stretch into an asymmetrical elongated shape.
Just to make room.
Exactly. In metallurgy, this phenomenon is called tetragonality.
So the actual geometry of the fundamental building block of the steel is distorted.
Highly distorted. And the result of that asymmetrical shape is anisotropic thermal expansion.
Meaning what, exactly?
That means as the steel heats up or cools down, it expands and contracts unevenly in different directions because the building blocks themselves are stretched out of shape.
Oh, wow.
This discovery was profound. It requires a complete revision of the traditional iron-carbon phase diagram, which is essentially the holy text for metallurgists.
The textbooks had to be rewritten.
Literally. The equilibrium we are looking at isn't between normal cubic ferrite and austenite. It is between this carbon-stuffed, stretched, tetragonal ferrite and austenite.
So we've got asymmetrical, bulging crystals. We've got trapped carbon, ultra-high-frequency acoustic earthquakes. How does this microscopic chaos affect the actual macroscopic usability of the steel?
That's the real issue.
Yeah, like if I'm an engineer designing a chassis for a car to keep a family safe in a crash, or tank armor to deflect a ballistic impact, how does this atomic bulging dictate the material's behavior?
It all comes down to how that specific distorted structure handles incoming kinetic energy and stress. And to understand that, we have to look at retained austenite.
Retained austenite.
Right. During this rapid transformation, not all of the parent austenite manages to turn into bainite. Some of it remains, and it becomes heavily enriched with the carbon that eventually does manage to partition out of the surrounding bainite.
Okay.
This retained austenite acts like a microscopic shock absorber distributed throughout the steel. It provides ductility.
Ductility meaning the steel can bend, flex, and absorb a massive impact without just shattering like a pane of glass.
Exactly. But the physical shape of that leftover austenite is the critical factor.
Yeah.
There are two main morphologies or shapes it takes.
What are they?
Blocks, which are essentially just chunky, isolated islands of austenite, and ultra-thin films, which are incredibly delicate layers sandwiched directly between the growing plates of bainite.
Like flexible mortar squished between rigid bricks.
Yes, perfect analogy. Now, those ultra-thin films are incredibly stable mechanically. They're fantastic at absorbing stress and stretching without breaking down.
Sounds ideal.
It is, until you realize they're thermally unstable. If you temper the steel, meaning you heat it up to around 400 degrees Celsius to try and relieve internal stresses, those beautiful shock-absorbing films rapidly decompose into cementite.
Cementite.
It's an iron carbide that is incredibly hard, but completely brittle.
Oh, no. So if the manufacturing process gets too hot, your flexible mortar bakes into brittle stone, ruining the shock absorbers.
Precisely. And managing those shock absorbers, well, this raises an important question. It brings us to one of the most significant puzzles engineers face when designing high-strength nanostructured bainite. It is known as the toughness anomaly.
The toughness anomaly. Why does that sound like it's going to be the reason something catastrophic happens?
Because it very well could be. Here is the anomaly. If you take this nanostructured bainite and test its fracture toughness, it performs exceptionally well.
Okay, fracture toughness being what?
It measures resistance to a slow pulling stress. If there is a crack, those thin films of austenite stretch and deform, absorbing the energy and making it very hard for that crack to grow.
Okay, so it handles a slow, agonizing pull perfectly. That's good.
But if you subject the exact same steel to a Charpie impact resistance test, it exhibits remarkably poor impact toughness. It totally fails.
Let's clarify the Charpie test for a second. That's the test where they take a sample of the steel, cut a small V-shaped notch into it to act as a weak point, and then swing a massive heavy metal pendulum into it to see how much kinetic energy it can absorb before snapping, right?
Correct. It tests sudden, violent kinetic energy rather than a slow pull.
So how can the steel be incredibly tough against slow cracking, but completely shatter when you hit it with a sudden pendulum impact? If the shock absorbers are there, why don't they work?
It didn't make any sense until researchers took those notched Charpie test specimens and placed them under high-resolution X-rays while they were actively being loaded with stress.
Oh, smart.
Yeah, and they focused their instruments specifically on the microscopic area, right at the root of the notch.
The exact focal point where all the kinetic pressure is concentrating.
Exactly. And what they observed answered the anomaly. The immense concentrated kinetic energy of the sudden impact causes the retained austenite at the root of the notch to prematurely undergo a phase change.
Prematurely?
Yes. The stress physically forces it to transform into martensite. Martensite, as we mentioned earlier, is incredibly strong, but it is also highly brittle.
Oh, I see.
This transformation is triggered before the crack even has a chance to initiate. So by the time the stress level is high enough to actually start tearing the metal, the material right at the starting line has already converted itself into a brittle, glass-like state.
It sabotages itself.
It entirely embrittles the exact region where the fracture needs to start, causing the shock absorbers to fail and the whole piece to snap under the pendulum.
It's like the sudden shock causes the steel to panic and harden, which ironically makes it shatter. So what does this all mean for the listener?
It has huge real-world implications.
It means that when engineers are designing a railway track for a high-speed train in a freezing climate, they aren't just thinking about the macro shape of the rail or the broad chemical composition. They're actively engineering the atomic architecture.
Absolutely.
They are agonizing over preserving ultra-thin films of austenite and figuring out how to prevent microscopic notches from locally turning into brittle martensite under the sudden, heavy, violent impact of a massive freight train.
The macroscopic safety of our modern infrastructure is entirely dependent on managing these nanoscale displacive transformations. If they don't understand the anomaly, the track fails.
It is just wild to think about. We started this deep dive talking about the myth of carbon slowly, politely segregating across a room.
The party myth.
Exactly. And thanks to instruments like synchrotrons and atom probe tomography, we now know the truth is so much more violent and fascinating. It's a rapid, noisy, asymmetric dance. Crystals physically shearing and forcing new shapes at 75 micrometers a second.
In a solid state, no less.
The steel practically screaming in high-frequency acoustic waves as it shifts, carbon getting stubbornly trapped like a bowling ball in a crate of tennis balls, forcing the very geometry of the iron to bulge and stretch, completely rewriting the textbook phase diagrams.
It really is a triumph of modern scientific instrumentation. I mean, the actual physics of the bainite transformation haven't changed over the millennia. Humanity has been working with steel. Our ability to actually witness it has.
That's a great point.
We are finally seeing the reality of the physics that were always there.
And that leaves me with a lingering thought for you to chew on as we wrap up. We've been making and using steel for thousands of years. It is arguably the most foundational material of the modern industrialized world. And yet, it took until the invention of atom probes and synchrotrons for us to realize that our older instruments were completely misleading us about how it actually forms at the fundamental level.
It makes you wonder what else we are currently misunderstanding simply because of the limits of our perception.
Exactly. If the very steel in the frame of your car is hiding this kind of rapid, noisy, microscopic chaos, what other common everyday materials in our world are hiding their true wild behaviors simply because our current microscopes aren't fast enough or sharp enough to catch them in the act? The next time you walk past a suspension bridge or even just look at a simple kitchen knife on your counter, take a second to look past the illusion of stillness. Try to ponder the microscopic earthquakes forever frozen inside.